In Florida, state lawmakers have voted to advance a gun control bill that would allow trained teachers to carry concealed guns in schools, something the NRA supports. It would also raise the age to buy long guns from 18 to 21, something the NRA doesn't support, which is why Florida NRA lobbyist Marion Hammer testified against the bill.
We have long supported keeping guns out of the hands of those who have dangerous mental illness. We do not support gun control provisions of this bill. These provisions are nothing more than an attack on the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding people.
So who is Marion Hammer? Well, she's behind most of the pro-gun legislation in this country. She started as a volunteer and then was the NRA's president in the 1990s. Now she is the top lobbyist in Florida, where her emails to lawmakers and legions of supporters can make or break a bill. Mike Spies has seen many of those emails. He's a staff writer at The Trace, a nonprofit news organization covering guns in America, which co-produced his piece on Hammer for The New Yorker. Mike, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And you start your article with an anecdote from the Parkland school shooting. You were there 2 days after the shooting with Jared Moskowitz, a Democratic rep from Florida. A student approached Dan Daley, who's a city commissioner in Coral Springs, and the student said, "Do something." Pick up the conversation from there.
Dan had to explain to the student that he was by law restrained from doing anything because there's a law that exists in Florida that prevents cities from passing gun restrictions or regulations stricter than those imposed at the state level. And if they do, they could be removed from office and also fined thousands of dollars.
And Moskowitz, again, the state rep, turned to you and said what?
That's the legacy of Marion Hammer.
Okay. Let's talk about Marion Hammer. There are so many other laws that she's behind in Florida, not just backing them, but you write writing them in many cases?
As one of her former colleagues points out, she single-handedly creates legislation. She's not only originating the legislation, but she's also, before it has a sponsor, working directly with government staffers, bureaucrats, on the language before it even gets to a lawmaker.
Well, and this isn't just you surmising this. You got thousands of emails. You also quote Steve Crisafulli, the Republican House Speaker between 2014 and 16, who said, "Members will go to Marion Hammer. They'll say, 'I want to carry a bill for the NRA this year. What are you working on? What are your priorities?'"
Yeah, that's right. And he was, you know, one of two major Republican lawmakers who said something to that effect, the other one being Dennis Baxley, who's now a state senator, who also said the way the process works is Marion works on it with a government staffer. And then when it's in the shape that it needs to be in, he comes in and puts his name on it. And he also says that he's not very detail-oriented, so he's not even really looking through the bill. She'll tell you that she's just giving input, but the emails show, and also her allies will say, that they can't often do anything without getting her permission. And she's the one, as the emails also show, dictating language specifically. There's just a paper trail of that.
Isn't this what lobbyists do?
The difference with her is that most lobbyists are contractors who lobby on behalf of a variety of issues. She's been on one issue for the last four decades, and almost always she is the only outside voice in the room. Legislation that could be termed gun control legislation, that goes nowhere in the Florida legislature, often because she can just send us, you know, a brief email to a policy chief on a committee saying we don't want the bill to be heard, and then it doesn't get heard. I've had other lobbyists review the emails, and they often say, bar none, she's got the best access. She gets replies immediately from the governor's office, important state lawmakers, staffers. I mean, they know that she's an authority.
Well, for instance, let's take the bill in 2011, the Firearm Owners Privacy Act. Colloquially, it's called Docs v. Glocks. It prohibited doctors from asking patients if they own guns. It's something doctors like to ask to point out potential health hazards for children if there's a gun in the house, or hazards to the suicidal. A lawmaker made a slight change to the bill. She excoriated him. Again, this is in an email exchange. He wrote back, "I had no intent to change the thrust of anything. See attached and let me know if that will work." I mean, as you said, there's a paper trail of this.
Right. And that wasn't even a lawmaker who was getting excoriated. That was the policy chief, whose job is just to make sure that language is constitutional. But the policy chief is just bypassing the lawmaker in that email and going right to the lobbyist, because the policy chief knows that the lobbyist, in this case Marion Hammer, is the final and absolute authority on the legislation. And you could see how this process is so corrupted, because that law in the end, last year, wound up getting ruled unconstitutional by a federal court. And if the policy chief had been able to do the job the way she's supposed to be able to do it instead of getting cowed by Marion Hamburg and having to follow her directions, it's possible that that whole thing could have been avoided. And instead, it cost taxpayers over $1 million to defend it in court.
Look, she started as a local NRA volunteer in Florida in the 1970s. This was back when the NRA was really just a sporting organization, but it was starting to establish its lobbying arm, which transformed it into a gun rights organization, and then worked her way up and really became a star, a superstar, with pioneering the concealed carry law. This was in the 1980s. And the concealed carry law passed in Florida, and then, of course, we know it's across the United States, was part of the thinking that she was a part of. It's too hard to change the federal gun laws, change them on the state level, maybe change them in Florida, and then spread them across the states.
That was the NRA's strategy and has been its strategy for a long time, and it's been a very successful strategy. There's a lot less attention paid to state legislatures. It's a lot easier just to move legislation and to influence lawmakers. And because she's been so successful, Florida has become sort of the test kitchen because she's able to move bills in a way that others aren't.
She was behind the Stand Your Ground law introduced in 2004, reminding people before that law, Americans were forbidden to use force if they had the option of fleeing. The new law removed that duty to retreat. She led the charge behind it. It passed. Then years later, 2012, George Zimmerman shoots and kills Trayvon Martin, and there were calls to review the law. She actually fought to enhance Florida's Stand Your Ground laws.
So now Stand Your Ground's got a really interesting thing built into it, which is that you get a path to immunity from trial if you invoke Stand Your Ground in what's called a pretrial hearing. And previously, the deal was if you wanted an immunity trial, the burden was on the defense to prove its case. This law shifted the burden to prosecutors in the pretrial hearing, essentially meaning prosecutors are now required to try a case two times.
So in 2017, Marion Hammer was behind this move to make prosecutors prove someone didn't have to use a gun as opposed to defendants proving that they did. But at that time, there was a Republican lawmaker who had some reservations. You seem to be saying that the emails you've recovered show that she effectively killed a judgeship for him.
She punished him. That's one of her tools. I mean, it's part of the reason she's so effective is she's able to use the government to hold her flock accountable if they wind up breaking with her.
Look, these laws are incubated in Florida. They're spread across the country. And actually, you quote David Cole of the ACLU, who writes admiringly of Hammer because of her ability to get results. He says, for 100 years, the Second Amendment was analyzed in terms of protecting state militias. The shift toward it having to do with individual rights can be traced to Marion Hammer. You point to one thing that she said early on in her career that helped in this shift from thinking of the Second Amendment about militias and thinking of it as about individual defense. It was her own story of being tracked by men.
So yeah, in the 80s, as she was pushing her concealed carry law, she began to tell this story, which was that one night after she was leaving her office, she walked into a parking garage and she was approached by a carload of menacing men who were saying all kinds of sexually suggestive things to her. And she talks about how she felt threatened and that they were going to do something bad to her. So she pulled out the handgun that she had in her purse, very cinematically raised it into the headlight so they could see it, and then they sped out of the garage. She was saved by her weapon. She never called the police, so there's no police report to corroborate it. But nonetheless, it's permanently tied to that concealed carry legislation as an argument for it. And the timing of it was definitely fortuitous.
So, Mike Spies, we started talking about the law that Marion Hammer backed that would fine or remove from office officials in towns or cities that pass stricter gun restrictions than the state of Florida has. But now we're hearing from Coral Gables and Broward County as well that they are considering taking those fines and making tougher restrictions. Governor Scott, the Republican who is said to be considering a run for the Senate, is also considering tougher restrictions than the NRA wants. Do you think that Marion Hammer's stranglehold has loosened, or do you think those efforts will fail because they will run into the buzzsaw that she apparently is legislatively? What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think at the local level, it's maybe a brilliant political maneuver to challenge the governor and the state to remove those city officials from office in the wake of this shooting would be just an unbelievably politically tone-deaf thing to do. At the state level, we're just in uncharted territory right now. As it stands now, it seems like there's enough Republicans that are willing to back what Scott is suggesting. And there is one thing in that bill that Democrats don't like, which involves arming certain teachers. So that could become a negotiating tactic. No matter what, Scott, I think, is pretty insulated. If enough Republicans get behind a bill that it gets to his desk, then he ultimately can say he's reflecting the will of the legislature. And if he does run for Senate, as most people think he will, this is, again, new territory. He's going to be put in the position of choosing between Marion and her resources and the Parkland students. And it's a position that I don't think anyone's ever been in before.
Mike Spies, staff writer at The Trace, a nonprofit news organization covering guns in America. His story, The NRA Lobbyist Behind Florida's Pro-Gun Policies, was produced in partnership with The New Yorker. Mike, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really great, Robin.